This is Central Time. Now, state superintendent of schools and Democratic candidate for governor, Tony Evers, delivered the annual State of Education address last night. In his speech, he called for more funding for the state's schools and devoting more money to special education. He also said that money could be found to boost the education budget through other cuts, not necessarily by raising taxes. Evers pushed back on arguments from incumbent Governor Scott Walker and other Republicans who say Evers would raise taxes if elected. Our next guest is here to talk about the address last night and the role education is playing in the race for governor. Laurel White is state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Laurel, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, this education speech, it's a regularly scheduled thing every year. Mm-hmm. It's getting a little more attention this year, right?
That's right. There are some different circumstances this time around. So this is a speech that the state school superintendent gives every year. And of course, because he is the Democratic candidate for governor this year, he had a little bit more of a political edge to it, I suppose. In terms of themes of the speech, there was a similarity to last year before he was the nominee. Last year, he really talked about needing to increase funding for Wisconsin schools. He referenced the number of referenda that have passed across the state for people to raise their own property taxes to send more money to schools. And he said then that that was a piece of evidence that people across Wisconsin are interested in having more school funding. So this year, he revisited that argument, but gave it a little bit more oomph. I think it's safe to say he referenced his new state budget proposal. The state budget proposals for all of the state departments were due early this week. And so he said, here's my state budget proposal for the Department of Public Instruction this year for this next state budget. I want to have a $1.4 billion budget, and that represents a 10% increase over his last budget proposal. So he's definitely trying to ramp it up in this election climate.
And what would that additional funding go to, as he laid out?
So it would go to several things that are either pretty sizable increases or new initiatives that he's proposing. A couple of the increases would be for special education funding. He's wanting to put $600 million into special education. He wants to dramatically.
I like that.
Drastic and dramatic. He wants to dramatically increase funding as well for student mental health programs in schools. He wants to fund all day 4K, so kindergarten for four-year-olds, and create the first ever state funding stream for after-school programs in Wisconsin. So these are things that he thinks would increase the success of Wisconsin students, get more money into the classrooms, and really target the things that he thinks are important that need more attention.
Now, in the course of the address itself, did he target Governor Walker and what he's done in education budgets, or did he do that kind of before and after, but not within the bounds of the speech?
You know, I think that he didn't mention the governor by name in the speech, but he did say that the people of Wisconsin have grown tired of their leaders not putting more money into schools. And he said he thinks that it's time for a change. He says some of his exact phrases were the pendulum is swinging in a different direction than it has in recent years. And he closed out his speech by saying the winds of change are coming. There's a change in the air, I think were his exact words. So he's not calling out Governor Walker by name, but I think he's definitely calling out politicians in the Capitol and the leadership in the Capitol in terms of budget priorities and education spending.
Over the course of the last day or so, what have we heard from Governor Walker and other Republicans related to what Tony Evers has had to say?
So education, of course, has been a really big issue this election cycle. The governor is touting his large increase in education spending in the last state budget. It was a $649 million increase in the last budget, per pupil increases that were substantial. So he's saying, I have made education a priority and I will continue to do so. It's something that I was able to do because of our economy doing well and some of the changes that he had ushered in. So he's defending his own spending on education, but he's also criticizing, and other Republicans are criticizing, Evers' approach to crafting this new DPI budget, as well as, you know, of course, if he were elected governor, he would be overseeing the entire state budget. And they're saying if he is elected and allowed to do that, he would be raising taxes for the people of Wisconsin, and that would really send the state backward.
And Evers has said taxes for some people might go up. He would be trying to keep them down for the bulk of Wisconsinites. What's he said about how he'd pay for the increases you were talking about?
So he said specifically for DPI, he believes that 10% increase, the $1.4 billion budget, could be paid for within the parameters of the existing budget, that we wouldn't need new revenue. He said that you could take revenue from other areas. He suggested perhaps scaling back a tax credit that the state has for manufacturers and farms that Democrats have said goes disproportionately to wealthy, you know, high income earners in the state, and that it's not benefiting most. So Evers said you could sort of do some rearranging, sort of reflect a different set of priorities in the state budget, and you wouldn't have to raise revenue. Now, as he said that, he also added, but I'm not opposed to raising revenue. He said that he wouldn't be opposed to raising the income tax, particularly for the wealthiest Wisconsinites, in order to actually give a tax cut to more middle-income folks. And he also said that he is open to a discussion of raising the gas tax, which, as you know, has been a very hot-button political issue in Wisconsin for the last several years.
We're talking to Laurel White, state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. She's with us to talk about Tony Evers delivering the State of Education address last night and the response from Republicans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the state of education is right now in Wisconsin? What do you think of what Superintendent Evers has to say and the response from his rival in the race for governor, Governor Scott Walker? Is education a top election concern for you this year? If so, who does it lead you to vote for? Do you think the state's doing enough to fund education? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we continue our conversation about the State of Education address delivered last night by State Superintendent of Schools and current Democratic candidate for governor, Tony Evers, and the Republican responses to that speech. Laurel White is with us, state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. You can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. Is education, is school funding a voting issue for you? Is it going to be an issue for you when you cast your ballot in November? And what is it going to steer you toward? Republicans, Democrats, third party, staying home? What could improve when it comes to schools in Wisconsin? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. And Laurel, you were saying earlier that education really has emerged as an issue. Both candidates are talking about it, a lot of back and forth on it. It isn't always a top issue in these big statewide races.
You know, it's not. There are some issues that consistently rise to the top. You know, we've been talking a lot about roads, transportation funding in Wisconsin. Of course, healthcare is a big issue. We've seen an awful lot of discussion of that, particularly in the U.S. Senate race this year and previous years, certainly, in debates over the Affordable Care Act. But really, education has risen to the forefront. I think there are a couple factors at play there. One is it was a rather large part of the last budget negotiations. The governor really made education spending a priority in the 2017-2019 state budget. He pushed those increases to per pupil spending and overall spending for K-12 education in Wisconsin. And then, of course, we have his opponent being the state school superintendent. Tony Evers was elected to that position in 2009. So that's really where his expertise is. And so that debate is particularly rich this time around because Evers has a lot of experience there. He can get kind of wonky with it. You know, he can get down into the details. And that's really where they've been going for a good part of this campaign.
How much of it is revisiting the past pre that budget? Evers has pointed toward budget cuts to education in previous budgets. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the whole Act 10 debate on union representation of state workers, which in many ways revolved around teachers' unions. Are we going back that far?
We definitely are. I think that the governor's past budgets on education are really the contrast that Evers is trying to draw here, because there was some level of agreement between Evers and the governor for this last state budget, the 2017-2019 state budget. As the governor has pointed out consistently on the campaign trail, Evers actually praised that last budget. He called it kid-friendly. He said that he and the governor had a similar idea of what an investment in education looked like. Evers says that he has said that because the governor adopted his own, Evers's own recommendations in a large part for that last budget. So he said, yes, I was complimenting it, but I was complimenting a lot of the things that were things I had pushed. But he points out that the previous budgets, the governor had made those sizable cuts to education. And Evers' point now is that the governor can't make up for that, that he had done such substantial damage that his additional investments in this last budget haven't been enough to make up for those previous cuts.
And apart from education, Laurel, what are you seeing as some of the big points of contention in ads, in appearances from the two main candidates for governor?
Well, there are two, I think, main themes from the two candidates right now that they're both really hitting on consistently. The Walker campaign has been talking about Evers' leadership in the Department of Public Instruction, particularly as it pertains to teacher licensing and situations in which they believe Evers should have done more to take teacher licenses away from individuals who had done inappropriate things in the classroom. Some folks, some listeners might have seen some of these campaign ads. They talk about teachers who have watched pornography in the classroom or engaged in other inappropriate behavior. Walker says that Evers should have done everything he could to revoke these teachers' licenses. Evers said that he did everything he could within the bounds of state law and worked to get state law changed. So loopholes that existed in not taking these teachers out of the classroom would no longer be there. And Evers is really focusing on the line of Scott Walker being sort of the career politician who's more about his ambition than the good of the people of Wisconsin.
We'll leave it there for now. Lots more election to come. Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Laurel White is state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. She joined us to talk about last night's State of Education address and the role education is playing in the race for governor between state school superintendent Tony Evers, a Democrat, and Republican incumbent Scott Walker. Tomorrow marks the first day of fall and hopefully the start of weather where we aren't afraid to turn on the oven. Fall can also be a season of comfort foods, the soups, comforting casseroles, and whether you've got summer veggies to use up or an endless pile of fall squash, maybe some oven-roasted vegetables are in the works this weekend. Deb Perlman is the author of the Smitten Kitchen blog, which she started in 2006. Her most recent cookbook is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. Deb, welcome to Central Time.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Well, before we throw our vegetables in the oven, I want to talk about a piece you wrote for the New York Times called Never Cook at Home, which really wasn't the message. But talk about that. You talk about all those little obstacles that pop up that might steer us away from cooking at home.
You know, when I talk to friends and, you know, other parent types like myself about cooking, I just feel like we all meet, all of us food writers mean so well, but we miss so much of what's really happening when people get home. And I wanted to broadcast it. I wanted to give voice to it because I cook for a living and I enjoy cooking. And I'm still like, oh, God, the groceries, the dishes, like there's so many things and it's so easy to not cook. And I feel like we need better reasons, too, than just like a feeling of being lectured, I guess.
So all that said, even after all the obstacles and maybe being put off by smart aleck food writers and radio hosts telling us how great it is to cook.
Guilty as charged.
You still think it is a lovely thing to cook.
I think it's really nice. And actually, September and October kind of usher in my favorite time of the year to cook.
Me too.
In the summer, I mean, I don't cook as much as just kind of assemble food because you've got like this great produce from the green markets and it's so nice and you don't really have to cook anything, which is great because it's also like steaming hot out. But as it starts to cool down, as it did this week, I find myself wanting to play around with, I'm turning on this, you know, oven thing again. This week just, I'd mentioned earlier that I started playing around with just kind of slow roasting vegetables. Last year I had started slow roasting sweet potatoes and it was really fun. I found that, you know, instead of cooking it at, you know, 45 minutes or an hour at like 375 or 400 or even 425, that by cooking it at like 275 for 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours, it almost, it concentrates the flavor so nicely and it gets sweeter and so complex inside. And you wouldn't dream of doing this in August, but it's such a nice September thing to do. It takes something like a sweet potato and it made it like something that I didn't even want to put more than a pat of butter on because it was so nuanced and complex. And the skin gets really crunchy and I roll it in, I coat it with some salt, so it gets a really nice crunch to it.
Let's stay with those sweet potatoes. We've got your recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. We're also tweeting it. You can find us at Central Time, WPR. Now, when I oven roast sweet potatoes, I kind of cut them into sort of a fry shape, toss them with oil and whatever spices. We're cooking with a whole sweet potato here.
Yeah, I'm trying to basically keep the skin on so it forms like its own, you know, vessel. Kind of keep trap that moisture inside and use it to keep steaming and cooking. I'm not a food scientist, so probably a science person is listening and like grimacing right now.
It's probably magic that happens.
This.
I think we
yeah,
do this,
probably
right?
Magic and voodoo happens in my oven. Is the best I understand. Some wizards come by, but I really loved what happened, and so I was just curious this week. I had some eggplant and I had some honey nut, the little butternut squashes at home. And I also had some whole tomatoes that were really large, sometimes too large to really be flavorful, you know, looking kind of end of summer, a little bit paler. And so I started playing around each day with slow roasting one of them. And I really like the results. They're different for each vegetable or fruit, if you're being super technical. But I was really, I also did some sweet peppers and the result, again, this is not for, you know, people who want a tremendous amount of texture with their food, but it really, I felt like there was a really complex flavor, like the eggplant just got really strongly, it tasted more like itself.
Wow.
The peppers got so sweet. It was almost like I made a confit with it, with just olive oil and garlic and a little bit of vinegar and salt. And the tomatoes are just, it was just such a nice change from the usual caprese salad. Not that I could ever get tired of such a thing, but with the slow roasted tomatoes, it felt more fallish. It was really nice.
Now, for all those vegetables you just mentioned, are you doing them whole, just like coating them in what, oil and putting them in the oven, or are you cutting some of those up?
I actually did each two ways. I did them each whole. And for that, I mean, for the big eggplant, you need almost 3.5 hours, but I was using, most of them were about 275 for about 3 hours. The halved eggplant were done much sooner. They were done at 2 hours. But I tried it both ways, but I really liked what happened inside the skin when I kept the vegetable whole. For the halved ones, I would, you know, put a little olive oil on it and salt. And obviously it's nice to get the seasoning inside. But aside from the, you know, shrunken, shriveled appearance, I like that when you cut open the skin, you have this really neat texture inside that just needs a little bit of dressing to make it like kind of a special vegetable.
Now, with that sweet potato one, I think you hit it with the broiler after you've done this. You know, you've had it slow roasting for a couple few hours. You hit it with the broiler for, depending on your broiler, 5-10 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, my broiler is awful. Your broiler will probably singe it into a few ashes in 5 or 10 minutes. But yeah, that was just about trying to get it like extra black inside. I don't know that works for every vegetable. I mean, to be honest, with something like eggplant, I would probably broil it for a minute before just to get that color, unlike you do when you make baba ganoush, just to get a little char in it. So it's not, you know, there isn't really like a one-size-fits-all formula, but for the sweet potatoes especially, where you have a potential for them to get really crispy and textured, I think it's worth it.
Now, are you just in like mad scientist mode? Here's another vegetable. I'll try slow roasting and see what happens.
I basically, like, I'm just craving vegetables, and I'm just, I think I'm turning on the oven. I'm like, I'm a person discovering the oven for the first time after not wanting to consider adding heat to the kitchen for a few months. And so, yeah, I've just been playing around, but it's been sort of fun just to see how the texture changes, how the flavor becomes more complex and nuanced, and how it kind of, like, I don't know that I would be just eating a whole roasted eggplant for dinner, but we made this dressing that I mentioned with the sweet peppers that I'd roasted, and it was so good. I wanted, like, it was fork and knife food, and I didn't want to eat anything else. Wow. It was really lovely.
Well, Deb, I'm in Wisconsin. I'm surrounded outside by two things right now: mosquitoes, which I don't think you can help me with, and zucchini, giant zucchini. Would this work with those, the slow roasting?
I haven't done it with zucchini yet because our zucchini is around. It's waning a little bit. But I was thinking that it might be nice for zucchini. I think I would be tempted to actually slice it up and cook it in a bit of oil with maybe some garlic cloves, like to really almost make a confit of it. I think that would just be really lovely to kind of like let the zucchini do its limp thing. I think that would be really nice if you finished it with like maybe some herbs or lemon, you know, and salt. And maybe some hot pepper would be nice there.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I like the idea. I mean, that would not take nearly as much time if you started it sliced, but I think it would be nice to just kind of like let it be what it wants to be, which is, you know, tends to be kind of soft if you don't fight it.
Now, I'm a big fan of oven roasting vegetables. I'm going to try your slow way. I usually, for any given vegetable, cut it into slices, coat it in some olive oil, whatever spices, hit it at about 400, and it doesn't take as long. But generally, I find that oven roasted vegetables, there are some vegetables that are like cauliflower, I could take or leave. Brussels sprouts, I could take or leave. Oven roasted, I love them. It really just bumps them up a whole category.
Especially because then you have the potential to have, you know, some black, you know, charred edges, yeah, and then still a little bit of crunch inside. This is not for crunch inside. That would not be the goal of slow roasting. It's just a different way to approach it. Again, I'm just playing around trying to see what comes out of it. But that's kind of what I do in the kitchen. I tinker a little bit when I have time.
Well, and I love, you know, people might hear, oh, 3 hours. It's going to take me 3 hours to cook a thing. But on a weekend, great, you've got them in there, and then you can do your other cooking. You make your soup or whatever you're going to make on the stovetop and just let everything in the oven ride for all that time.
I mean, aren't people watching, like, football all weekend? Isn't that what people do?
We do that from time to time in Wisconsin.
I'm not trying to, you know, you know, stereotype or anything.
Ooh, so wait a minute. I want your slow-roasted eggplant and then mush it up in a good dip with some, I could do that with tortilla chips or pitas or whatever.
Absolutely.
That would make a great football game dip.
It would also make a really good, it would really make a really nice start for baba ganoush too. For that one, I would definitely get a little char in it. But that, again, it's just, I feel like it's a little more of a developed flavor. You know, again, the goal is not texture and crunch and, you know, color and stuff like that. It's more just a very, I feel like a very pronounced, like it's more itself flavor. And it can, you can take something that's maybe just okay produce and give it a lot more depth. I mean, I think the sweet potatoes I did last winter were, I mean, they were grocery store sweet potatoes. They were not, you know, from some magic garden where they'd been like spoken to every day and stuff. I wanted to see if I could make like the most basic of sweet potatoes taste good. And it was really, I found them far more interesting than I usually find sweet potatoes.
All right, I'm going to get a little bonus recipe. And another thing we have coming along now in fall is our winter squash. And I saw you have a recipe for squash toast with ricotta and cider vinegar on your Smitten Kitchen blog. Talk us through that a little bit before we let you go.
Oh, my goodness. So this
looks
is actually
so
really, I want to make sure I get the origins right because I feel like there's a couple chefs that are kind of known for this dish. But I feel like it really comes from ABC Kitchen. And I think it was the chef Dan Kluger that developed this recipe. But I'm sure somebody will tell me if I'm wrong. But it's not the slow roasted squash, but you could use it there. And you spread some ricotta on toast and you use some squash that you roast. And what's really nice though is you do this, make these kind of jammy onions with cider vinegar, kind of almost like it tastes like a reduction when you're done. And it together, it's just one of these things that when you eat it, it doesn't sound that wild, like squash, ricotta, jammy, sweet, sour onions. But when you have it, you're like, why would I ever eat anything else? And you put it on a nice thick piece of grilled bread and it is dinner. It is like the perfect party food. Like if you made it tonight, you would actually be glad it was fall. It's just one of these perfect, perfect dishes, and it's really fun to make at least a couple times a year.
We'll leave it there for now. Deb, thanks a lot for joining us. Hope we can talk to you again sometime.
Thanks for having me on.
That was Deb Perlman, author of the Smitten Kitchen blog, which she started in 2006. Her most recent cookbook is Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. She joined us today to talk about slow roasting vegetables, especially the great fall veggies that are out there right now. You can find that recipe, by the way, for the sweet potatoes, slow roasting a whole sweet potato, WPR.org/FoodFriday.